outcomes of Belcore Radio.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode number 5 of Belcore Radio. Episode 5. Okay. I've already lost track. You were just listening to our new intro music by a friend of mine named Dr. Electric. So, thanks to Dr. Electric for making that damn cool song. But I'm joined by a very special guest host here. And you can go ahead and introduce yourself.
Special guest.
Yeah.
My name is John Lewis. Good evening.
Yes, a very, very, very special guest star. Had to actually sneak him out of school for gifted youngsters. And that was a very lame joke. But we're going to go ahead and pretend it never happened. So, you want to go ahead and we'll just jump right into some of this crap?
Absolutely. You're the boss.
All right.
Take it away.
Yeah, that's right. On your knees. All right. I guess we want to start off the show talking about some new inventions that have come out as of late that are pretty damn cool. One of them is kind of weird, but who came out? It's, I don't know how you pronounce it, Zyxel. It's Z-Y-X-E-L.
Yeah, that's
came out with, they came out with a voice over IP phone that's like a cell phone. It works off of like off Wi-Fi.
Ooh.
So you can basically, it's really cool concept. You can basically just like anywhere that you have an open like access point, you can stop and, you know, make a phone call. It's like a regular cell phone as long as you have wireless access at the place.
Oh,
but,
that's fancy.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if they had a price listed on here anywhere that they're estimating, but it's not looking like they have anything. Here we go. It's, says it'll sell for around $200. So, not a bad deal.
No, that's not bad. Especially Zyxel products are actually very good. They have a pretty good reputation, especially with DSL, and I don't know if they do cable modems or not. They do other network products as well, and I'm hoping that if that's the case, by the looks of the documentation I've seen on it already, it ought to be a pretty damn good hot item. But I guess we'll have to see, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine why, you know, that wouldn't get, you know, a lot of business for them, you know, because I mean, voice over IP, it's not, you know, a really widespread technology as of right now. I mean, it's pretty damn widespread, but
right,
not exactly cornering the market.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, as far as people who use VoIP, that would, you know, I don't even use VoIP, and now I want to just so I can have that.
I do. I use it religiously. I mean, I have a Samsung Wi-Fi phone, and you know, of course, where I live out in the middle of nowhere in western Pennsylvania, it's kind of funny because people laugh around the area. They see me setting up hotspots just so I can tote around my Wi-Fi phone. But on the same token, of course, they're used by laptop users and the like. But so it's catching on. The floodgates are starting to open, but, you know, it's not quite to where the consumer market is. Of course, the consumer market's using it, but it's not mainstream yet.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just a matter of time, I think, you know. It's too good of a technology not to get used by a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. It's coming.
It's
definitely coming. But I'll wait on your little segue, and then I'll give you my whole stance on that later. But
yes, coming up soon in the episode, we'll have a nice forecast of the future from John. He's a psychic. But I forgot to tell you. You're supposed to figure that out. Come on. You're the psychic here.
Excuse me. I should have come better prepared.
But I guess keeping on
the car.
I guess since we're talking about cell phone type of technology, not exactly cell phones what we were talking about, but the calculator people, Texas Instruments, have been developing. I think they've completed the technology. They've basically, instead of having a cell phone with, you know, three or four chips inside to make it all work, they've created technology that can have a single chip. And I think it's for GSM stuff. And that they're predicting that it can greatly reduce the cost of cell phones so that, you know, people who don't have enough money to actually purchase a cell phone now can mm-hmm. purchase one of these cheaper ones and get ass-rammed by the cell phone providers like everybody else.
Yeah, that's taking off. I can remember when, I think it was Texas Instruments, either they or Motorola got so far into integrated circuits that they decided to build onto a 14-pin IC an FM radio, which actually, surprisingly, worked very well. So, of course, that was a 14-pin integrated circuit, which in the 80s, that was big shit. And I think this is going to be a good thing. It's going to take off.
I mean, it kind of worries me, though, because from what I've noticed, you know, cell phones, they're great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I use my cell phone all the time. But from what I've noticed, they're killing payphones. And I love payphones.
That's true. That's true. The, you know, you've gone from a public telephone, and now everybody has cellular telephones. Of course, and, you know, I'm sure you probably know, you go into Sweden, you know, or wherever the hell, I think it's Sweden, the capital of Nokia, and I think, what is it now, 60% of their population, somewhere in there, people have cell phones. I mean, whereas the U.S., it's what, like 40%? You know, so it's popular, but not that popular here. And hell, the damn kids have them. You go into any high school, seventh grade, you know, middle school, high school, seventh grade, now these kids have damn phones now. You know,
yeah.
And it's becoming so commonplace. I can't tell you where there's a local payphone anymore.
Yeah, and I've just noticed so many, like, some, even, you know, I don't really use payphones a lot. I like to play with them. I don't actually generally make phone calls on them besides, you know, toll-free numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it scares me because it's so fun of a technology to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, cell phones are great. They're really convenient, but I don't want to see payphones go away, you know? I don't want to see cell phones get used so much that I can't, you know, walk down to the corner and after, you know, I get done whoring myself, go over and, you know, just pick up the payphone and, you know, punch around, try and, you know, find some cool toll-free numbers on it or just fuck around with it in general. And I don't want to lose that, you know?
Right.
That's what got me into freaking, and I don't want to get rid of it.
I don't think they're going to disappear. I think they're gonna change, obviously. In other words, I don't think it's uncommon. I don't know if you've seen these stupid damn infomercials that make their way onto television at 3 a.m. God knows if you have Dish 500, they're all over the place on some channels. But there's this stupid damn company now that they're trying to make a business enterprise for people by basically selling these wireless access terminals that you can put in the mall and you can put in your grocery store, you know, and then, you know, all you have to do is go in and collect the money and they're maintained by some other company and, you know. And I think you're going to see a similar thing with public phones. They're not just going to be public phones anymore. Some of them may be internet terminals. Some of them may be whatever. And, you know, nowadays, phones, I've seen some phones already that accept credit cards, for Pete's sakes. You can swipe your damn card to use the phone. And I think that's where that's headed. You know, they're not going to disappear, but they're going to change. And when they do that, I think you're going to see people using them to some extent. But that's a whole big giant picture.
Yeah, you know, I guess with the changing technology, that would also open up like a whole new doors for people to explore how, you know, just how that technology, how they've adapted it. Freaking of the payphones is just going to adapt to work with that technology instead, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hacking and freaking will never die, per se. It's going to change forms, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think it's ever going to die. There's always room for exploitation and exploration and pick another word that starts with E that rhymes. You know, that's what you're going to see happen with it.
Well, I guess go ahead and move on to the next one. And this one's kind of funny. I'm really wanting to get my hands on one of these things. Not so much get one of these things on my hands, though. Some scientists in Singapore made a battery that's powered by piss. And I don't know what is wrong with Asia, but they continue to amaze me with the weird shit they come out with. I'm trying to see. The battery, it says it'll put out about 1.5 volts
mm-hmm.
from just, like, 0.2 milliliters of piss. And I don't know. I don't even know what to say about this. This is just...
It's going to be interesting. I mean, eventually we're going to come to a day where people say, oh, excuse me, I have to step into the bathroom. Oh, do you have to take a piss? No, I have to charge my batteries. You know.
Like, I don't have to piss right now. Do you think you could piss on my cell phone?
You know, these are almost like Ronco products, you know, spray-on hair and everything else. I'll bet we're going to see this on the evening television, too, at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
This is easy as 1, 2, 3, included is our handy-dandy eyedropper just to insert the urine into your battery. You know, it's going to get out of control.
They're going to have David Hasselhoff advertising it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Because I think any new technology that comes out involving urine, David Hasselhoff has to be the spokesman for it. I believe he was the one who was demonstrating that the filter that could turn urine into water, that was, and basically he drank his own piss on TV. But, and if David Hasselhoff is listening and that wasn't you, I apologize. But as far as I can remember, that was David Hasselhoff. I doubt he's actually listening, but...
No, I doubt he is. Well, maybe he's secretly a freak. We never know, but... or something along those lines. Who knows? But, boy, if that's the case, he's certainly a manly man, huh?
Yeah.
He'll be handy in a survival situation scenario. I just wrecked my plane. Oh, don't worry. Have some piss. Man.
Okay, I don't mean to go off the show notes, but this is... I was reading the article that this whole piss battery thing was in. It's off the register.
Yeah.
And it's got this little related stories thing where I guess, you know, they just look for keywords.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an article titled, Does Your Urine Smell of Maple Syrup?
Of maple syrup, yeah, I did see that one.
And I'm not going to get into that on the show, but I just wanted everyone to know, if you're interested, you know, if your urine does smell like maple syrup, you can go here. I'll put the link up in the show notes. You can click it and, you know, we'll get you some help. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, you might have MSUD, which is maple syrup urine disease.
Or you might just spend too much time at the Waffle House.
That too. Yep. Yeah. Something to watch for.
Okay, back on phones and less piss. This one was kind of cool too. Who was it that made this? Was this people at MIT that made the jerk? Yeah. People at MIT. Yeah, the jerk-o-meter, which is basically analyzes people talking on the phone and rates them on how much of a jerk they are.
Yeah, I read this last week in my local paper, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. It was off the AP. And, a friend of mine actually sent it to me in an email and said, hey, check this out. Thought you'd be interested. And I'm like, gee, this could come in really damn handy.
Yeah. No, I wasn't aware of this. It actually sends messages to people. When they're being a jerk, it'll pop up a message on, like, a terminal nearby them that this is running on. It will say, like, don't be a jerk. Or if they're being nice, it'll, like, compliment them for being nice. That's really...
Yeah, I guess it's your typical blonde airhead replacement. I mean, how the hell do you not know if someone's being sarcastic? At least, I don't have any trouble. But... I just don't understand that. I guess, interestingly enough, the prototype runs in Linux and a couple of VoIP service or something. I don't remember now, but it looked kind of interesting.
Yeah, I could imagine it'd be really fun to use, but I think it'd be kind of a different story if someone was using it against you. Because that just wouldn't be nice anymore.
True. Although maybe they'd get the hint, I don't want them to call anymore. I don't know. Then again, some people don't. I get people to call, they're like, it's so nice to talk to you. I'm like, yeah, so damn nice to talk to you too. Oh, well. But very interesting, just the same. Hopefully they'll incorporate it into every telephone now.
Yeah, every new phone you buy, the telco is going to supply you with a little terminal running the jerk-o-meter.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, there you go, 7960 add-on, the jerk-o-meter.
So you had something that you would like to discuss? Go ahead and let you...
Well, I really liked your last episode regarding, I guess you and Beeve, and well, you had a shitload of people on the show. And I thought it was really interesting because you guys had discussed Cisco and Nokia partnering up. And I did see an article slip by a couple weeks ago about that. And I thought it was interesting because obviously you'll be able to follow along here. I see a pattern that leads, you know, we had discussed, you know, before we got on the show here about the future of telephony and lightly where I think it's going. And this ties in. First of all, Cisco bought Linksys. What do you and I and most people know Linksys for having and selling?
I'm going to go with wireless routers.
Okay, wireless routers. Basically, that was what I was aiming for, routers. And Sapura. They just bought Sapura. And what does Sapura have?
I don't know, honestly.
Oh. Well, now you're being informed. They have voice over IP products like analog terminal adapters. And now they have an IP phone, which is crappy, but that's another story. And, of course, we know Nokia for...
Yes, cell phones. That's
cell phones. I see a pattern. I don't know if you see it. First of all, if you look at, obviously with the router part, you're buying their competition. You know, that's just kind of an easy market share. But it's kind of a stepping stone, because now you look at Sapura, and Sapura, they have voice over IP. Well, that's interesting. Of course, so does Cisco, but their products are so outrageously overpriced that they're not going to be targeted at the consumer market, whereas, of course, every Sapura adapter is going out in the form of a Linksys PAP2 or something else. But anyway, to come full circle here and start into my little diatribe, I thought about this one day. A couple months ago, someone said, where do you see telephony going? And I said, well, that's easy. It's going into VoIP. And they said, are you sure? And I said, well, yeah, I can almost say that. And reason being, first of all, every large telephone company, at least Verizon, and the other ones are starting to follow suit. They're all offering DSL, even some of the few minor independents that still exist in our nation. And they're all basically becoming nothing but data centers because, you know, you look at switches like carrier-grade switches like the AT&T 5 ESS and the Nortel DMS 100 and the Western Electric DCO, which is now a Siemens system. And although all these systems are still being produced and they work, even the companies that make them are now trying to push, you know, like Nortel's pushing the simplicity line, I think it is, which is basically IP telephony. But basically, with DSL and everything else being rolled out and voice over IP happening, they can get rid of all of their large switching equipment. And basically, you could build or take an existing phone company as it stands with today's technology, hoop in a few asterisk servers, terminate those lines, integrate them onto those Lucent systems, like if you're running a Lucent Stinger or something as your DSL aggregator, and go from there. So basically, you can take an existing company, or at least an existing central office, excuse me, and scale it all the way down to just a few racks full of equipment. It's a lot cheaper, in a lot of ways, a hell of a lot more reliable, and you get more done. In other words, you can push DSL out basically to every customer's doorstep nowadays with DSL repeaters and go completely from analog into digital and, you know, supplement, not only provide data service, but supplement it with voice service in the form of voice over IP, which makes a lot of sense. And that's kind of where it's going. But coming back around looking at Cisco, you have Cisco, and now they're buying the cellular market. And I see all of these internet-based companies trying to get a cut of the cellular industry. And the reason being, just like the Zyzel phone you brought up earlier, I see a point where you're going to see all these cellular companies, at least I think, believe it or not, go to a point where they're going to start doing 802.11, you know, ABG, whatever, they might come out with something else, and start pushing that instead of GSM and everything else, because you look at all your devices now, they're all becoming Wi-Fi and internet ready. And with VoIP slowly becoming a mainstream standard, that's the only common grounds between the two. Not only that, to save a large technical discussion, if you break apart for 10 seconds and look at the radio spectrum that the cellular system runs on, it is almost maxed to the hilt because you can only move so much bandwidth in those spectrums, you know, 1.9 gigahertz and everything else. You can only move so much bandwidth in a logical frequency allocation space. So, you know, you're coming to a point where you know, you have more mediums on the internet now. You have MPEG-3, and now I guess MPEG-4 movies and everything else are coming out. File sizes are becoming bigger. The current cellular system isn't going to be able to hold up because it cannot track that much data. And you can't really go higher in frequency because the higher in frequency you go, typically, the lower your physical range is, you know, from your cell site. So I think they're all getting into a crunch and they're saying, maybe it's time for everybody to go VoIP. And to add more insult to injury, you now have IPv6 rolling around, and even though it's slow, I think you're going to see a lot of internet providers trying to bridge the gap by, they'll all be going to IPv6 per se, but they're going to start, companies like Linksys and whatnot are going to start handing out routers that do IPv6 to IPv4 conversion, so you don't have to change your operating systems and everything else in the meantime just to keep up, even though IPv6 is now native and Linux and Windows and I would assume the Mac OS and everywhere else. So I think that's kind of the direction we're headed as a society. Not only does it make sense in the technical level, but it's more feasible, and it's more feasible for companies to migrate to that because they can provide more for less cost. And I think it's kind of neat to look at that. Of course, that's my own opinion. I mean, that's me working on the inside, you know, being at central offices and doing VoIP and businesses and setting up networks and everything else. I think that's a big indication when you see companies like Cisco plucking up, you know, cellular companies and trying to make an acquisition. Not so much a monopoly or increasing the value of the stock, which it will inevitably do. It's more of a technology and where are we going type of thing.
Well, I think that your assumptions on the Cisco buying up crap would make logical sense. I mean, I don't have the ability to see so far in the future. Oh, great shaman or whatnot. But I'm kind of inclined to agree with you for the most part. I don't have the experience, you know. I haven't had the pleasure of working on the inside. But from what I've, you know, sitting at home on my telephone, that seems like the general direction that, you know, telephony is going to be moving. But, you know, I'm ready for it, I think.
I could be wrong, naturally, and you're welcome to disagree. It's just, you know, with some of the trends out there, a lot of it, I'm sure a lot of this is already in progress. It's just a matter if they haven't blown the socks off of everybody yet, because obviously society doesn't progress that quickly, and a lot of people couldn't take it. They're like, oh, my goodness, I just dropped $80,000 on a corporate phone system, you know, stuff like that. It's slowly coming because, you know, you're slowly going to see DMS 100 sitting out in street corners for the garbage man. I mean,
you'll start seeing DMS 100 in my basement.
Yeah, there you go. I kind of embrace it with open arms. I mean, there's, what else are we going to do? You know, and I think it's going to benefit society. You know, when you think about how easy it is to, at least with current standards, to change carriers, you know, you can't do that now. You know, your phone company and your cable companies, and they're just going to be orphaned into data providers, you know, glorified ISPs with serving wire centers, and that's basically all they're going to do. You know, the concept of a phone company is, as we know it, is probably going to change, but that could be as far as 20, 30 years down the road. It's going to be interesting.
I can't really see it going any other way at the moment, at least. Just because, I mean, you know, voice over IP, it is more efficient in a sense. You know, it doesn't take as much space to have all the technology to run it. Doesn't really, you know, it's more cost efficient, I would think. And
right.
I can't see that not being a logical choice for companies to try and move to it, you know?
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't mind if they, you know, still charged me up the ass like some companies have tend to do.
Right.
You know, just, it doesn't seem like there's any loser in the situation.
Right. Yeah, someone even said to me the other day, they said, well, that's impossible because, they said, DSL only runs 18,000 feet. And, you know, yeah, that's true. But, you know, first of all, you can extend it, which is a whole different story. And the next thing, too, you know, as I said, if you stop and kind of sort of dump most of the conventions we've come to know today as far as, you know, providing data and everything else. If you're pulling out switches out of the central office, what's stopping you from rebuilding a data network, period? Because if you're going to drop voice on it and everything else, and it's just for data, it doesn't need to, well, of course it needs to exceed analog grade, you know, to serve digital. But in other words, when you're dropping all that equipment out, you can put something else in place that's going to push, you know, 36,000 or, you know, 52,000 feet and so on. And I think that's kind of what we're looking at. But it's a lot to think about. And, of course, you know, I encourage everyone to give a thought and think about where they feel it's going. Especially with everything I've seen, all signs point to Cisco trying to snatch things up. They know they've lost partly because, you know, pick any VoIP carrier. They're not using Cisco Call Manager and Unity Voicemail. You know, first of all, you have to buy all the hardware, you know, the routers, the FXS and FXO cards if you're using them, and your T1 banks or whatever, or rather DS1 and DS3 and everything else in between, it just gets too costly. You see people out there like Beef and Sleestack and these kind of people gathering up all this junk, per se. It's the rest of the world would look at it. Of course, you know, one man's junk is another man's treasure, but, you know, they're making call servers out of, you know, Pentium Pros, for Pete's sake. And you have Cisco running, you know, charging you $30,000 just for a damn router that'll terminate maybe 3 or 4 T1s. So it's like, this is a tough decision. Which way am I going to go? And the business market's looking at it that way, too. Of course, Cisco built up a name. They've been in business, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
Maybe more. Somewhere near in the 70s, but they're going to start losing out because they can't keep up. They're trying to take their standards, their proprietary protocols, and say, this is what the rest of the world has to use. And everyone's like, oh, okay, it's Cisco. And it's just not happening. And I think that's why they're starting to chase after these companies like Sapura and everything else. Sapura had a better idea. They couldn't stand it, and plus they want the money, and bam, you know, acquisition. And that's where it's going. That's exactly where I think it's going. They've got to fight to survive.
I think it was only a matter of time before, you know, companies started realizing, instead of, you know, shelling out all this cash to buy really expensive crap like Cisco products or other stuff in general, we could just use these, you know, old computers that, you know, it's not really up-to-date technology.
Right.
And we've replaced them with, you know, better computers, but we still have them sitting in this, like, random closet somewhere in our building. Why not set up a phone network with that, you know?
Right. That's exactly right. You know, you think about it, the very system we're on, of course, you know, we ran into this a whole different story. You know, if you want to pick up a junk 586 platform, or, you know, even better, pay him two or three, and throw an asterisk on it, and put on the network and everything else. I mean, you've basically done it for the cost of a junk computer, a few hours of time to set it up, and an internet connection. You know, you want to do, if we wanted to do the same thing on a Cisco platform, it would be ungodly. Not only that, to terminating hardware on both ends, you know, we'd be in the poorhouse. But it's just not a lucrative market anymore. And I think that's why they're so eager, you know. And to see them attempt an acquisition with Nokia just absolutely floored me. It didn't. I expected something of this nature to come up in the IT world and to come up out of the dirt and say, okay. But, you know, see Cisco grab Nokia, it's a good move in a way, but it's kind of a desperate move for Cisco. And probably one for Nokia. Just because I, you know, one's a giant cell carrier, or cellular equipment producer, and one's a big networking producer. And I'm kind of glad to see them make alliances here. But on the same token, I think it kind of spells dark doom evil, because you have two leaders in a market, and neither of them can sort of come up with their own technology by the looks of it. So, hey, what the hell, they're going to merge. You know, that worries me.
I think the whole merger was just kind of a sign that, you know, not so much Nokia, you know, they've got their work cut out for them, really.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
They've got a handle on, like, this. I think, like, they make, like, what, 40% or so of, like, all the cell phones in use in the world. I mean, they've got the cellular market as far as, like, making the phones. They've got that locked down.
Right.
But I think it was kind of showing that, you know, Cisco realizes, hey, you know, there's this big market that is taking off, and we can't let that market take off without us having our brand name slapped on its ass.
Right.
And I think it was just a sign of them scrambling to catch up, you know, with the rest of the rest of the world.
Yeah, I haven't looked to see what products they're making, and I would imagine Zizel has beat them to the GSM/ voice over IP Wi-Fi phone. But you can bet that Nokia is going to have a truckload of them, at least for a while. And I think at that point, when they improve the Wi-Fi concept and refine it and hone it a little more, I think you're going to see things start to phase out. With of course, Nokia will probably have the name, but they're probably all going to be IP phones, and that's just my wild guess. I don't know. I'd like to hear other people's thoughts sometime, on or off the show, to see what they think, see if that's where they feel the market's headed. But it's interesting. You know, we've come at a good time to see this stuff take off and progress. You know, everyone thinks, oh, the 70s were great when the steppers came out and you could freak. Yeah, sure. That's cute and swell and perfect. But, you know, we're in a completely digital age where you're about to merge almost every communication medium just by the internet protocol, be it V4, V6, whatever. You know, you look, our telephony system's moving that way. They're now starting to push, obviously cable television in some respects is digital, and it's moving more toward the internet protocol, And basically anywhere the internet protocol works, you're going to have devices that work with it. You know, obviously for years we've had it in other forms, but you know, people are going to be able to watch television on their damn phone now. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see.
I'm anxious to see where it goes. I'm hoping that your predictions are right. I can't imagine why they wouldn't turn out to be right. And I'm looking forward to it. So, you know, if that's the future, bring it on. I'd like to see what happens.
Well, now that I've exhausted that subject to death, then people are probably like, damn, you finally shut up. I see you have some other excellent, interesting things lined up here. Even still.
Yes. Some things. See, now it's probably going to be my time to go on long-winded rants about things. Because, well, actually, let me find the magazine before I start talking about it. Because I want to read the exact quote. And now I can't find the magazine. But, oh, Christ. Hey, anybody who's looking to make a radio show, I got a piece of advice for you. Always make sure you have your references on hand before you start recording your show. Okay, well, you know what? I'm not going to use the direct quote.
Well, I can read your show notes, but, you know, that would kind of spoil it now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I have the magazine here somewhere. I can't find it, though.
Is this the article you were going to talk about?
Yes, it was an article in Nuts and Bolts magazine.
Ah.
Now, I really like Nuts and Bolts. It's a great magazine, and generally they cover, you know, I mean, if nobody's read it, it's like a electronic hobbyist type of magazine.
Yeah.
And it's really good. They've got a lot of interesting projects and stuff. But this last issue had an article called, it was Taking the Teeth Out of Bluetooth Fracking or something similar. And, you know, not a bad article, just talking about securing Bluetooth and stuff like that. But they had a quote in there that really, really got under my skin and pissed me off when I read it. And it was talking about war driving. And basically, to sum up the whole quote, because I can't read it directly, it basically said, war driving is the act of finding access points so that you can log in and use other people's internet without their permission. And that pissed me off when I read it. Because, you know, I'm a really avid war driver. I do it, you know, basically when I'm in my car, I have my laptop on, and it's, you know, running NetStumbler. And when I read that, it felt like, you know, all the work that, you know, hackers have been putting forth to make us not look like criminals, it just knocked us back, you know? Yes, people do go and log into other people's access points. But that's not what war driving is about, you know? War driving is probably the most innocent, like, benign form of hacking I've ever heard of. And they make it out to be, you know, if you hear someone talking about war driving, then they're going to, you know, go steal people's bandwidth or whatever.
Yeah, I wouldn't get too upset. I mean, first of all, Nuts and Bolts, they're not the electronic gospel. They'll tell you that, but that's a whole other story. Yeah, obviously, you know, I'm not going to get long-winded again, but, you know, we already know the stigmas attached to freaking hacking, whatever. I mean, you dump them into the same category. And obviously that was just written in ignorance or to lash out. I think that Actually, I think it's been the reverse. I mean, you look at hacking and freaking in a nutshell and what have you, and it's been beneficial because obviously you bring light to security issues that would otherwise be left unnoticed and unchanged. And, you know, obviously war driving has proven, what is it, web security, whatever the hell, web security to be somewhat useless, especially if you're able to grab rainbow tables and everything else and start, you know, throwing all these keys against the router to see which one's going to stick, you know. So I think war driving has done nothing but help wireless security, especially like I mentioned. If I feel anyway, it's going to become more popular. It's quite an improvement. I'd like to see situations where, I mean, then again, we have people like, I'm sure you know the types, they go out and they just want to mooch internet connectivity. And obviously, if you watch Fox News, CNN, whatever, I don't care what biased people are, they've given war driving a bad name. But, or war drivers, excuse me. I don't know. I think it's been a good thing, really.
I agree.
The people are testing it and saying, hey, yeah, this is not secure. Fix it.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's kind of relevant to, you know, every aspect of the hacking community, though, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you know, we get a bad name for ourselves because no one ever reports. You know, you never hear about someone releasing a patch to help something and people calling them a hacker. They're a security expert. When you read about a hacker in the newspaper, it's always, you know, somebody who wrote a virus or broke into some bank and stole all the credit card numbers.
Right.
They never report the good things that hackers do as having come from hackers. And
right.
I guess, you know, in some ways, you know, a hacker and a security expert are kind of, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. But it's just,
Yeah, you never pick up a paper and read where Joe Schmo saved XYZ Corporation $20 billion for exploiting their system, you know. You pick up and read about LexisNexis and, you know, you name it, things like that. And of course, we actually know people who did that, which is kind of sad too, but, you know, in the same token, though they did exploit security, that was a big hole, and it could have literally sit there and been undiscovered and unnoticed for some time, letting it grow into a nightmare. Of course, we live in a society today where rather than people thanking people for those kind of things, it's more of a let me sue you and make money on you instead and trash your name because I was an idiot and didn't secure it right in the first place, you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just gonna say, I guess that's how it goes. That's society. That's become acceptable.
I think people don't really seem to realize that, you know, even malicious hackers, and not all of them, you know, I don't want to say that they're good. I don't condone, you know, doing evil things with technology. But even malicious hackers help, you know. They show people that, you know, this is a big thing. You know, someone can use this, and it's not just, you know, something that might happen. It's something that does happen, and it's happened now because you didn't fix it.
Right.
And again, that's not to say that I encourage people to go out and do things like that.
No, I don't either.
I think that it's wrong, you know, but I think that a lot of people won't learn unless they're, you know, forced to. people have to learn the hard way before they'll actually pay attention.
Right. Right. Whether that'll ever happen, I don't know. You know, and it's basically a quest for knowledge. You know, you're going to have people trying to exploit networks and technology-related devices until the end of time. It's just the quest to learn and improve, and which is what society does. And unfortunately, it takes place in other places in real life, just, you know, not just hacking. You know, it's a more of a political issue. And that's a shame, but that is life as we know it.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the, you know, that's, if you're a hacker, that's kind of your lot in life. There's not really getting out of the fact that I think there's just been so much damage done to our name that there's really no coming back from it. I mean, you know, personally, I'm going to try as hard as I can to make a good name for hackers in any way I can. But I really think that, for the most part, we might be able to... We'll never be able to convince people and explain to them, like, older generations who have grown up knowing that hackers are evil people. There's no changing that thought process, you know? It's been force-fed to them by the media for so long that I really don't think there's changing it. But it's
there's truth to that.
Yeah, I mean, hackers, there are people that are evil. Not saying there aren't.
Right. There are a lot of malicious people who do that. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people that truly the computer's their only social outlet. And they're ignored in other places in life, unfortunately. And part of it is an attention thing. I mean, and of course, you and I both know some well-known hackers that have, you know, been convicted or what have you. And, you know, I've talked to some of them and said, well, why did you do it? And, you know, obviously the quest for knowledge is one thing. But then they're like, oh, well, you know, I said, I'll push my limits and, you know, and they don't deny the attention thing. Some of them live on it. You know, there are a couple people. I mean, I don't want to mention names and embarrass them. Not that they'll hack my stuff. Well, I'm kidding. I don't care if they do. I don't have anything. You know, they're actually, and we'll have to save this for another show almost, but I'm seeing where they're trying to capitalize on. They're going out and committing the crime and doing maybe hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars of damages, like, you know, LexisNexis and whatnot. Then they're turning around post-conviction and using their widely acclaimed name and trying to weasel into these high-profile technical jobs like doing more hacking or, you know, working for the phone company or working for an ISP and on the top level or something else, or working as security consultants and charging outrageous prices. And it's just, it's kind of funny because I know a couple people who are doing this, yet they're, you know...
I think it's kind of sad though, because I've talked to quite a few, you know, I mean, like, I've talked to a lot of varying types of people in the community. I've had the pleasure of talking with quite a few people, you know, like a lot of script kiddies, a lot of people who deface websites and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I find it really sad that a lot of people think that by doing things like that, if they do get caught, then stuff like that is going to get them a job in the computer, in the technology industry. And it's like, yeah, if you do something that is new and, you know, something that's exploiting technology that hasn't been exploited before or in a way that hasn't been done before, and it's like a revolutionary thing, yeah, you might very well get, you know, offered a job after, you know, people find out who you are. But, you know, if you go around doing, like, DOS attacks on websites, you can't expect to, you know, have, you know, companies coming and throwing job offers at you afterwards, because
right.
chances are
right.
you probably did a DOS attack on the companies anyway.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. And when you see people that, you know, they hack the website and they put on the page, this is done by such and such crew, and they use letters and numbers and everything else, and, you know, the elite speak, and then they turn around and shout outs too, and then they list, you know, 20 nicknames of people. You know, that's like, oh yeah, we're dealing with a real winner here. and, you know, of course, those kind of people are too dumb to get anywhere. But I mean some of the accomplished people that have been in Wired News, and they've been on television, and they, you know, and you and I know some of these people, and
yeah.
we see them at conventions and everything else, and they're out saying, well, yeah, I hacked this place, and basically I'm using this as a scheme to make money. And it's kind of pathetic. I mean, I bless them for, you know, wanting to talent themselves and keep a respectable job, but they're going and getting thrown in prison and coming out and, you know, having, and of course they're rallying up the masses and, you know, let's have a free so-and-so fund and pay for legal counsel for so-and-so and all that stuff. And that's where I laugh, because it's like, you did it, you got caught, you stay in there, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not paying for the damn fund. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to accept responsibility for your own actions, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, I can understand, you know, like the Mike Lynn Legal Foundation. I can understand that, because, you know, he didn't really do anything wrong. He just, you know, he let out some information. But, I've seen so many campaigns and stuff online. And people like, oh, you know, he hacked thousands of credit card companies all across the country, and then he got caught.
Right.
This is just so unfair. Why are they treating him like this? And you know why? It's because he hacked into credit card companies and stole credit card numbers.
Right.
And he's a thief. He deserves to be in jail.
Exactly.
That's what happens when you steal things.
Yeah, the only... You know, of course, Kevin Mitnick, he didn't do anything too majorly bad, but of course he was sort of a poster child. He was they made an example of him, and you see worse things happen. Like I'll give you an example. Kevin's amateur radio license was suspended because the man that runs the Enforcement Bureau, Riley Hollingsworth, he decided that because he was a convict, he felt he would be a disruption and whatnot to amateur radio, so he suspended his license. And, of course, Kevin did not violate Part 97, which is the section of law that governs amateur radio. He did not violate that in any way. He didn't do anything in radio to jeopardize his license. You know, so I'm sympathetic toward, you know, because what he did elsewhere had nothing to do with that, you know. But other than that, you know, when people go out like, you know, I don't even want to mention names, but as I said, we know who they are. When they go out and they hack sites and then they get caught, and then they're like, oh, gee, why did I get caught? You know, and then they're like, oh, you know, so-and-so's setting up a fund for me, and, you know, and if you want to contribute and everything else, no. You know, there's some sympathy that they get caught, but not really. Not enough for me to be compelled to give them money for...
Yeah.
That's basically enabling them. That's like giving an alcoholic more beer. You know, I'm not going to do that.
I guess, you know, not only are they, you know, not only did they go and, you know, hack websites or whatever and, you know, try to be the cool kid who, you know, defaces sites or whatnot, but they got caught. And, I mean, that's two strikes against them right there.
Right.
And then they're not accepting the fact that, you know, they broke the law and they have to face the consequences and not
right.
mooch off people that they don't even really know on the internet, you know.
Right. And that's where the whole bad name thing comes from. I mean, that's why you have people like that who are, you know, idiotic and self-centered, and this is what they do, and then they're like, oh, gee. And no wonder. I mean, you know, this is, I can see why the news media is angry and cracking down on these people and trying to make further examples out of them. You know, this is what happens. I mean, plus when you take the average the average age of your quote-unquote hacker and you look and they're all like 12, 13, 16, what have you, no wonder. You know, they should be a little more adult-like in their thinking and logic. If, you know, if they have the logic to go through and compromise the system, surely they have the logic to think ahead what it's going to do to them, you know.
Yeah.
But, well.
And you'd think, and, you know, this is kind of just a petty little thing, but you'd think if somebody's going to go through the trouble of actually defacing a website and trying, you know, in the possibility that they might go to jail or get fined out the fucking ass.
Mm-hmm.
You'd at least, you know, put something decent up on the fucking site. Like I said, I know that it's, you know, a petty little thing, but I hate, you know, when people are like, oh man, this site got hacked, and I go and I look at it, and it's like, white screen with like the words like, you got owned by the KPC crew, and then it gives like their IRC channels they hang out in or something. I think that, like, if, you know, a successful defacement of a website would be something really subtle, you know? Like, you go on the site before time and copy their banner or something they have on there, and then, like, Photoshop it to say something really funny to where people wouldn't notice it unless they actually read it. And I think that, I mean, like, you know, it's still wrong, but I think that would be, you know, something that would be funny. And not, you know, not searching across the internet for, like, every site that has the same, you know, exploit or vulnerability and just, you know, hacking everything you can get your hands on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just seems kind of pointless to me, you know. If you have a reason to face a specific website and you have, you know, like a cause that you're trying to get across, like, you know, let's say you're defacing, like, a KKK website because, you know, it's the KKK and you're against them. I can, you know, it's not good, but I can kind of let that slide, you know. But when people are just like, hey, I exploited you because I can, and that makes me cooler than you, ha ha ha, it pisses me off. And it makes me just want to, like, go to their little IRC server that they have set up there and get all their IP addresses. Since, you know, I know for a fact half of the people on there probably aren't very smart and didn't proxy to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, put them on an email, send them to, like, Agent Johnson at the CIA and be like, hey, these are the guys who defaced this website. Because I think that people, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's just stupid, and I don't think that I think that people get too much recognition for doing things like that, and that makes other people want to do things like that.
Right.
It's like, it's kind of like a never-ending cycle, you know?
And that's where it all stems from, more or less. That's where all those problems stem from, and which is sad, but...
Maybe what we need to start doing is getting all the people in the hacker community together to start finding exploits on site or finding vulnerabilities on websites, hacking into them, and then patching everything and updating all their stuff and then leaving them a nice little note that says, hey, we fixed all your shit. Find the hacker community.
Good luck.
Of course, we'd have to, you know, replace all the vowels with numbers, but...
True. You'd have a lot of people suspicious of that. Why would they want to fix it when they could deface it? You know, and... that's good. That would be tough, but...
Yeah. I couldn't really see it happening, but it's a dream. I think that it would be... Actually, no, it probably wouldn't make any advancements in making our name any better, simply because people would be like, oh, but they still hacked me, so they're still evil.
Well, thinking of websites, tell me about, I know you had something on your show list here for website related.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have show notes, don't we? We've just been, like, rambling on for the past hour. But,
I listened to all 70-some minutes last time. I was at 67 minutes. I don't care.
Okay. Well,
we can't be
this
that
one,
boring.
No, see, I think this is probably the best episode we've made so far. But, this
don't
topic...
Don't have to hear that. Go on.
Oh, yeah, I'll edit that out later. I think that, you know, this topic, I don't want to get into political crap because that's not what this show is about.
No, get into it. It's fun.
No. I'm just going to go ahead and say it right now. I don't like the current event. I'm not going to, you know, I just... Because people might be listening to this in the year 2018 and not know who the president was at this time. I don't like the current president. I think that he's not exactly the brightest guy in the world.
George W. Bush.
Damn you. Yeah.
W.
Okay, the cat's out of the bag. So, yes, I don't really care much for the George Bush. And I don't know if, you know, all of you have heard, but they've been... putting up the idea, I don't know if it's been official or not, of making a domain that is .xxx, you know, so that, you know, porn sites or whatever, or, you know, any site that really wanted to, could get a site, you know, like www.bukakishemales.xxx. And that's, I've already registered, so you guys can't have that one. But but it appears that George Bush... is against those because he's concerned about having the quote here is a virtual red light district on the internet reserved for pornography.
Well, I kind of like that. No, you know, and I'll tell you why. Do you know how nice it would be to set up like Dan's Guardian and SpyBot and all these products out there and Spam Assassin and everything just to block that top level
oh, yeah.
Domain, you know.
Exactly. I mean, I don't, I'm assuming simply from that statement that George Bush made that he's never been on the internet, but the internet is a red light district for pornography.
Yeah.
You can't go on the internet without having pornography at least two clicks away. I think that this would be Yeah, this would be great simply because, you know, let's say you're a network administrator. And they, I think that they should require all pornography sites to get an XXX domain.
Right.
And then
right.
you could just block all traffic to XXX domains.
Right.
And you
right.
wouldn't have to, like, use all these intricate web filters that, you know, catch, you know, kids on their school computer trying to get, like, sex education information because
right.
it has the word sex in it, so they can't look at the website.
Right. And really, you know, I mean, politically I'm unbiased, so it doesn't really matter. I'm more moderate anyway. But so it doesn't matter what I think or don't think of political figures. But just to clarify that to people listening are like, well, what's this dance? Anyway, I mean, you wouldn't even have to have, per se, disclaimers. You know, if you make that requirement to move everybody. And think how easy it would be just for internet providers alone to filter that, you know. You call in one filtering, you know. It would cut the software hassle down because obviously it would filter that, you know, domain. But I don't know why that would not be approved. I just don't understand that. Of course, I mean, I don't necessarily care to see any of that stuff myself, and I don't care if people look at it. That's their own business. It's, you know, their cup of tea. But I would just as soon be moved off and out of the way. That way, you know, you could freely go to a .com, .net, .org, .whatever,
yeah.
and not run into stuff you don't want, if you don't want it, you know.
Yeah.
I think the people that own these sites and maintain them would be a little happier because they wouldn't have to go through all the legal snafus. I mean, obviously, if it's a .xxx domain, it's evident as to what its content is going to be. You know, there's no question. You know, you're not going to sit there and go, I wonder what this is. You know.
Like, what? Live action? What? Girl on girl on girl.com. I wonder. But yeah, I think, personally, I think that they should put the XXX domains up, make them mandatory for porn sites, make kind of a, I don't know how you would say, I guess kind of like a law stating, or like, not a law, but like a word I can't think of that's similar to a law.
Mandate.
That, yeah, that would be good. That, you know, if you go to an XXX site, you have to be 18 to go to the site. And, you know, that would kind of cut down. I mean, sure, you know, it would also make it a lot easier for kids who aren't 18 to go look at porn.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it would also be a lot more convenient for the porn sites themselves, you know, because there's really no way of them being liable for it then. There's really no way of, like, a kid, say, going, like, let's say the, you know, BukakiShemales.com goes to the I agree, I disagree page, and then you click it and it goes to, you know, BukakiShemales.com/main.html or whatever.
Right.
Who's to say that a kid couldn't just, you know, type in the URL for that site and say, oh, but it didn't ask me if I was 18 or not, so, you know, it's not my fault. This would, you know, cut that completely out because it would be a
right.
.xxx domain, and
right.
there's no getting around it.
Right. That is exactly true. Oh, well. I guess common sense does not always prevail.
Yeah, I can assume it's probably something, you know, George Bush trying to appeal to his, you know,
constituents,
the,
sure.
Yeah, the Christian influence that's, you know, because, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, the Christian people, but I can feel, you know, he has a really strong pressure to comply to the Christian morals.
Yeah, and to think this is his second term and he can't serve another, you'd think he'd just be on easy street, but I guess when you're a politician, you got to do the marionette thing and bobble around.
But yeah, that's just our little bit of show tonight. I guess cover one more thing here, and I'm probably going to have to wrap this thing up because it's been about an hour and a half now.
Oh, yeah, we got two more items on the list. We can knock them off in no time. I'll keep it short.
All right. This topic...
The next one I don't care about, but the last one's interesting.
Yeah. This one here, I've heard a lot of people talking about it. I don't know if it's been finalized. Last I heard, it was still just like kind of a rumor that's been floating around that Google might be sponsoring like free Wi-Fi hotspots in like major cities all over the country. And, you know, I think it's really cool because there's a lot of people that don't really have access to, you know, some cities have, you know, their own free hotspots in certain places. But for places that don't, I think this would be really cool because, you know, then people could use it. I guess that kind of goes without saying. But I'm not totally sure if it would work, simply because I've seen a lot of places that have started, like Orlando, we talked about it in a previous episode, Orlando put up a free hotspot for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For, I think, like a little over a year, but then it just started costing them too much, and they had to take it down.
Right.
And I could kind of see this going the same way, but...
it's interesting. It could go... I don't know what to think about this. It's just kind of another... I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that it's neat to see, but I don't give a shit because, one, I don't live in a city, and two, I don't use Wi-Fi that much, and three, I just don't care. I mean, Google is, it's a nice idea. I think they're spreading themselves almost too thin, in a way, as a company. I mean, they're a good company, but I don't know if they're ready for this.
Yeah,
I don't know if the public's ready. Because of the abuse factor. Go on.
Exactly. It kind of makes me nervous just seeing all the things that Google kind of has their foot in, you know?
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, it's convenient. You know, I like Google search engine. But, you know, Google search engine does keep logs of everything that you search.
Right.
I have a Gmail account. But Google can access everything that's in your email account at any time.
Right.
A lot of people have, you know, the Google little taskbar thing on their Internet Explorer or on their Firefox. Well, it comes on Firefox. And, you know, who's to say what Google could do with that? I don't have, you know.
Right.
It worries me. And this is just... another step in the direction of Google being able to see all the traffic going to and from your computer.
Right. Not only that, I think it could ultimately fail them. They're into the advertising thing big time anymore. And every damn site I go to is powered by Google Ads and some shit like that, which I despise. But I guess they add color. What the hell? But if it fails, it's a nice idea. But if it fails, and it could easily acquire a bad stigma, then it's going to sour Google's name. I mean, if it, you know, because they're the type of company, it's going to take off. It's going to get interesting and exciting. And it's going to last for like 6 months. And then they're going to have some ugly demise, and it's going to come crashing down. And that's going to be it. And then people are going to be like, Google? No, I don't use Google. Do you use Google? Oh, we're not friends anymore. You know, I mean, that's kind of one of those things. But yeah, we'll have to see.
I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm inclined to agree, though, that I think that it's a big undertaking for them. I'm not sure that they're ready for it. I don't think that they, you know,
understand. Yeah, where's the money coming from, you know?
Well, that's another thing that's kind of suspicious to me about Google, how they just kind of took over everything out of nowhere.
Right.
But, I don't know. I'm not totally sure that they're ready, you know? I don't think that... Because you know for a fact, if Google started putting hotspots in cities, that there would be people sitting all around those hotspots, hacking them 24/7 just to change the SSID. I know I would, probably.
I wouldn't even be concerned, sadly. The thing is now, I don't even... When I leave the house, for the most part, not always. I mean, I like to play at times, but for the most part, I don't take a phone, I don't take a PDA, I don't take a laptop, I don't take anything. When I leave, I want to be left alone. And I don't take a cell phone. I don't take anything. Nothing. I'm lucky to take a wallet. And, I don't know. I wonder, I just would like to see what's going to happen. That's going to be a cute thing. Of course, I'm sure with Velcore Radio, you're going to come back and revisit that topic sometime. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with that and where they get the funding to.
I'm sure in, you know, the year 2026, when, of course, we'll still be making this show then, because it's going to be that great.
And we'll be old.
Yeah. I'll be, you know, sitting in my wheelchair at the home, talking on my telephone. But I will find out Google was really just a front so that, you know, the NSA and the CIA could monitor everything you do.
It's run by the Teamsters Union.
Yeah.
That's their business front.
It turns out Google was the one that was collecting all that data so that spam emailers could send you stuff.
Now we know where Jimmy Hoffa went. Mystery field.
Well, I guess time for the last topic here, which has also been kind of...
This one's interesting.
This is
funny.
I've heard a whole lot about this one from various places, but basically, some guy named Jose Avila he didn't have any furniture in his apartment. You know, he didn't have a whole lot of cash. So he went to his work or somewhere and got a whole bunch of FedEx boxes and made furniture out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, or he posted pictures of, you know, he was like, wow, I'll make a cool little project out of this, and took pictures of, you know, the whole process of making the furniture and put them up on a website. And now FedEx is, you know, they're trying to, they're not suing him as of yet.
Right.
But they're kind of pressuring him to take the pictures down, and they're saying that he's violating the DMCA.
Right.
And I'm guessing simply by using, you know, having their logo up all over his page or something.
Right. For those uninformed, the DMCA is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. But, yeah, it... I mean, basically, he's taking garbage and making furniture, which, praise him. That's amazing.
Recycling.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. This PR is going to kill FedEx, for one thing, and make this young guy, they've got a picture here. I've looked at the site. He's going to be, what, our age, 20, 21, 23, somewhere in there, 22. It's going to make this guy almost famous as a designer already. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be sitting around designing furniture out of cardboard. At least you don't think. But this has been kind of a good thing because his his name has been disseminated everywhere now. But it's sad that FedEx would do this. I mean, I would expect this from other companies, but not Federal Express. I mean,
yeah.
You know, especially when they, this is what kills me. You have companies that pay millions upon billions of dollars each year for advertising, and this one article makes it all over the news, you know, online, like Wired.com, and of course, if you Google it and do FedEx box, I'm sure it would probably come up, or FedEx furniture. They spend millions of dollars for advertising. This article would do them more favors in advertising than anything else. And they're slapping the kid on the wrist saying, no, you can't take our garbage and make furniture out of it.
I think that, if anything, they should be, you know, happy about this. This is like, you know, sure, he's not giving them money to use their logo or whatever, but I mean, is he, like, harming their company in some way by using their boxes to make furniture? Because I really don't see how it's a downside for them. It's, I mean, I think that they should be encouraging him to do this, simply because it would make a good name for them, because it would show that, you know, they support, you know, recycling. It shows that, you know, it shows that their company would, you know, this shows that their company doesn't care about shit. That's what I've gathered from it.
Mm-hmm.
Their company says, hey, that's ours, and you can't use it, even though it was sitting in a garbage can.
Right. Right, especially after, I mean, the box is not proprietary property. The logo might be, you know, but obviously they distribute boxes and for everything else. I mean, what are they going to do? Start coming to everyone's home saying, hey, do you have any FedEx boxes? We need those back. You can't have possession of that.
Yeah.
You can't burn it. You can't deface it. They bring it to you. Well, in fact, you can't even open it. You're going to ruin the box that way. It's very ludicrous. But FedEx aside.
Your house now.
Pardon?
When the Fed gets to your house now, he'll actually open up the box and just leave all your shit on the front porch and then go.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. Just crazy. I mean, I can see their side. I mean, obviously, you're going to have, with any situation like this, you're going to have a bunch of people copying it and running out and trying to get 400 FedEx boxes so they can furnish their home. That or someone's going to take up UPS next and try to get their stuff, or the United States Postal Service, you know, or you're going to
personally,
see someone.
Personally, I don't think that, I don't personally think that any box you get through the United States Postal Service would still be in a sturdy enough condition to make furniture out of. But, and probably same goes for UPS. I don't really get a lot of shit through UPS.
Yeah.
But from what I've gathered, the United States Postal Service and UPS, they don't really take a very good care of a lot of the packages.
Too bad it's not DHL. DHL, they're trying to make a name for themselves. You know, if this kid would have just done it for them, he would have.
He'd be like the spokesman.
Everybody would ship through DHL. Excuse me. Yeah, he'd be like, what's his face for Subway? You know. I just don't eat your sandwiches. I went on a diet. And this kid would be like, I just don't ship stuff in your boxes. I live in them. You know. Oh well. Such excitement.
Well, yes, that is. It's a very, very interesting time to live in the world.
Yes, and I thought I had all the news, and here I come to Bellcore Radio just as a guest, and I've learned more in an hour and a half than I would on television. So,
I think that's the only compliment we've ever gotten about this show.
Oh, that's bullshit. No, I didn't listen to the first three episodes, but episode four I thought was very good. And that was the first one I ever heard. So I still have to go back and listen to 3, 2, and 1. But,
yeah.
That's on my list.
I think that, yeah, I think that all of our listeners will be very pleased that for once our show was actually, for the most part, all about phones. We've had a lot of complaints that we haven't said a damn thing about phones in like the past four episodes.
Well.
So, hopefully this will be the start of big things for us. I've been really looking involving the telephone system and similar things. So be on the lookout, guys, because
just think of the next time I'm on as a guest, I'll probably be using the portable Wi-Fi VoIP phone that has the Texas Instruments cellular chip technology equipped with a jerk-o-meter powered by your empowered batteries, so one never knows. I mean, this is quite the beneficial show here. I mean, we could be onto something.
I think, I think we're going to have to go into business with this one.
Yeah, this could be going somewhere. This could be going somewhere.
Right. Well, I guess that will just about Bellcore Radio. Do you have anything else you'd like to add before we close out of here?
Don't forget your shout-outs.
Ah, yes, don't forget my shout-outs. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome.
I want to give shout-outs to Black Ratchet and Strong Carlson from Binary Revolution Radio because they recorded tonight as well, and they gave me shout-outs for no apparent reason, so there you go. And I would also like to give shout-outs to my friend Peck for no apparent reason besides the fact that he's been on my ass to do it ever since we started recording this show. So, you have anything anybody you'd like to give the shouts to?
Just all the Bellcore Radio and Telefreak folks. For all their dedicated work, all the shit they've had to put up with for the past, I don't know, several months. You guys have been really patient getting the VPS in order and everything else. So, it takes time. I guess once we have all this manpower, we get shit done, don't we?
Yeah.
That's it. Thank you for having me in your show. It's been a pleasure.
It's been very, very fun. We'll have
to
do this again.
I hope the Nielsen ratings go up.
Well, I guess until next time, guys, keep hacking and keep freaking and keep having fun. This has been Pony Boy, and you can say your name.
Oh, and John. Episode 95, Bellcore Radio.
See you guys in 2 weeks.
Ciao.